Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go, hook him up! I'm gonna drag you until I wear your Texas ass out.
The game is awesome.
And hell, I might even get on top of my wife tonight.
Welcome to another edition of Over the Top Radio. I am your host, Ed, in San Antonio, and I'm joined currently by my co-host, Craig. What's going on, Craig?
Not much. What's going on with you, Eddie?
Just wondering when I get my shirt.
It's in the mail. Not really.
In the mail.
They're going to press sometime next week, hopefully early next week, so I can get them out very soon. I'm excited.
Cool. So, are you actually going to make some money off of this, or are you going to come out behind like Granny did?
Granny did not come out behind, but she's. We're going to make a little cash. Yeah, I ain't going to lie.
That's cool. And we got our other co-host on the line, Couture. What's going on, Couture?
Not much, guys. What's going on?
Same old. How about?
Cool. Well, last time we were on the air was, Craig wasn't here, but it was right after the pay-per-view, and we were wondering how Raw was going to be. What you guys think of Raw?
I liked Raw. I think people's expectations were too high going into it, just because of the show Sunday night was so awesome. It was, like, impossible to duplicate that, just because of the setting and everything. And I liked how they kind of kept it slow with the tournament and just had, like, nothing but wrestling matches, but then they kind of kicked it in gear in the end with a big angle, which I really liked.
Yeah, I didn't think they could, you know, do what everybody wanted them to do. So I thought it was a good way to...
You couldn't have him on the show.
Yeah, I thought it was a good way to, I don't know. It was the best way they could have done it. And to make everything make sense, because if you would have brought Punk back too early, it would have been, I don't know, it wouldn't have meant anything.
Because he said he was leaving. He said he was leaving. You know, he hated the company. He's going to take the title and leave. So that's what he did.
Right.
You know, they played it right, in my opinion.
Right. Absolutely. And I think it was good. I thought Vince was tremendous in his part.
It looked like it was actually real to him. No one put him on the work.
We were expecting like a Vince freak out, you know, like all Vince freak outs. Instead, we got all these tears and like it was totally different. So it's kind of unpredictable.
I thought the fans were cool at the end when they were actually chanting Vince's name. I thought that was actually kind of classy for wrestling fans.
Especially after they're just doing the not a nothing, but hey, go you, whatever.
Yeah, it was good. You know, like I said, I think it was the best way to have everything make sense. You know, we'll see next week. You know, we'll talk about this in news later, but you know, we got a championship match next week on Raw, which I think will be a pretty good, darn good match. And the surprising babyface turn of The Miz, if you can believe that.
I got it. What's funny is, like, when Raw is kind of starting and they're kind of announcing the brackets or, like, basically the tournament matches, I get a text from Rodney who's saying, okay, this is what they should do. They should pretty much say it should come down to the real losing first in the first round to Kofi, and then it should come down to The Miz, and I'm not sure who he said The Miz was, but he goes, have The Miz win and have, you know, because I guess, you know, we need to use kind of wrestling hurt that night. Have The Miz go all the way to the championship, win it, and then have the real come back and claim the Money in the Bank and defeat him. And for a while,
right,
it almost kind of looked like that was exactly what they were building to.
And honestly, they still could do that.
I think they just ran out of time now, so they're just waiting for next week. But I was like,
right,
goddamn, dude, that black referee must be Rodney.
He kind of looks like him, doesn't he?
He does. I think that's his like twin brother or something.
You know what? I always listen to Brian and Vinny on Thursdays or Fridays. I'm sorry, and they kept talking about the ref on TNA and his blue shoes.
Yeah.
And until they said something, I had no idea he was wearing blue shoes. And I watched, and how distracting! The bottoms of this man's shoes are blue, and now I am fixated on the blue shoes in the TNA show.
I try not to watch TNA, so I only notice them on pay-per-views.
Hmm. That's the same douchebag ref that we saw in Kent, and he had like wristbands on, you know, like NBA players would wear. And Brian's like, look at that douchebag ref, and we kept talking about him because he just everything he did was so douchebaggy, and you know, now he's full time on television, and
it's like the one cardinal rule of being a ref, you know, you don't draw attention to yourself,
right? Which is funny because, you know, Brian was talking about how they used to, you know, when we were working indies, you know, they would just have any old buddy be ref sometimes. I actually refed a couple matches.
He must have been just like Bronco Lubitsch.
Yeah, 6'2", pushing 3 bills. Yeah, it's a good ref.
They move around. It took you forever to make the 3 count. It's more like a 6 count.
I wouldn't even kneel down. I would just use my foot and tap it 1, 2, 3. Yeah.
You remember in TNA when that goofball Slick Johnson always wore the shorts?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's been some bad. That should be a whole show for us. The worst refs of all time.
Before I call the guest, I want to go back to something we were just talking about right at the start of the show about a Craig shirt. Craig, how... did you take offense to Granny just totally no-selling your shirts a couple weeks ago and, like, complaining about how they are wasting her time?
I actually laughed because it was awful funny. But they're not my shirts. I don't care. They're Brian's shirts. They got his logo on them. I really could care less. I'm just...
On the shows, he's putting it all on you. He's all
crazy. Oh, I know.
He's all crazy. Poor
Craig. No. See, if he tells everybody that I'm making the cash and I'm doing all the work, that way when, you know, everything falls apart, it's my fault. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
There's a method to his madness.
That's funny. Well, you guys, I'm gonna try calling Pat right now. So you guys talk amongst yourselves here.
You betcha.
I'll be right back.
So, Craig, what was the... how big of a crowd did y'all have for y'all's pay-per-view party last Sunday?
More than usual. Usually it's me and Vinny and Brian looking at each other, and there was... Brian wasn't here. He was actually on his anniversary whatever, and there was still 7 dudes here, 8 with myself. So, yeah, it was a big crowd, actually.
A lot of good reaction to the show?
Yeah, Yeah, Vinny at one time, after the show was over, Vinny looked at me and goes, "Nice job, Craig." I was like, "Oh, yeah, I did everything."
And, yeah, I thought that main event was awesome.
Oh,
I enjoyed that main event more than I liked it better than Taker and Triple H this year.
See, I was in the building live, so that's hard for me to judge. But, yeah, watching it back, like on Blu-ray, yeah, totally. It was an amazing match. Good.
They five stars to it.
I don't know if I'd go five. I would go 4.5 though, easy. Yeah, it was a great pay per view. The Money in the Bank matches were good, and yeah, just a lot of good stuff on that show, man. I'm really excited about wrestling again, and I haven't been able to say that in 12 years.
It has been a while.
Yeah.
I can't remember last time there was a pay-per-view that good, maybe WrestleMania 17 or something like that.
Yeah.
Did you like the top to bottom?
Craig, could you introduce our guest, please?
Sure thing. Our guest tonight has worked for every major U.S. promotion in the 80s. He helped put tag team wrestling on the map. He is a multi-time AWA tag team champion, and he had one sweet mullet. Please welcome to the show one half of Bad Company, Pat Tanaka.
Hey, guys, how are you tonight?
Doing well. How you doing, Pat?
I'm hanging in there, guys. How are you guys?
Oh, my gosh.
I'm tired, though.
Well, that doesn't make for a good
interview. Tonight, guys. Oh, hold on one second.
You bet.
Okay, I'm ready, guys.
So, Pat, I wanted to ask you about, I always thought, like, when I first started seeing you wrestle and seeing the name Pat Tanaka, I always kind of thought maybe they were playing off Professor Tor Tanaka, but you're actually the son of Duke, and I'm probably going to say the name wrong, so please forgive me, Kimuka, and I was wondering if you could tell us about him.
Okay, what was that?
If you could talk about your dad.
Oh, sure, yeah. My dad was a professional wrestler in the 40s and 50s and 60s. He did wrestle a little bit in the 70s. His main, he was Mr. Moto's partner, Hiro Matsuda's partner. He did a lot of wrestling back then, and his biggest rival was Fritz Von Erich. And that was in Dallas, Texas.
About what years was this?
In the 60s was the era for, well, the 50s and 60s for Fritz and my father. They still hold the record in Dallas for the most sellouts at the Sportatorium.
Oh, wow, that's pretty cool, man. I mean, I grew up on World Pass, but that's just a little before my time.
Yeah, that's way before mine as well. And in fact, they did. They sold out 52 weeks in a row, him and Fritz.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was quite.
Yes.
Go ahead, Craig.
Did you always know that you were going to be a pro wrestler like your old man, or was this something that he kind of had to push you into?
No, he never pushed me into it, and I never watched it. We weren't allowed to watch it, really. It's something that was not talked about in my family or anything like that. I think my dad got me in the business when I was really young, setting up the ring, because I wanted to keep me out of trouble. So that was a big issue, damn. I was always in trouble in school, so he figured that he'd keep me busy on the road. So I started setting up the ring with Gordon Nelson. I don't know if you remember him. He set up the ring in WCW when Eric Bischoff was there and all them. Him and Klondike Bill, they were the ring set guys then. But he's been around forever, and he was retiring when I was coming in the business setting up the ring, so me and him traveled every night and set up the rings.
Now, you got started in about 85. This is on your Wikipedia page, so if something comes up false, please let us know. You got started around 85.
Well,
you're working
85
with
Croc. Is kind of a loose game for me.
Mm-hmm.
I really started in Japan in high school. They sent me over to wrestle in Japan for New Japan Wrestling. I was in the dojo for 4 years there.
Wow.
And that's how I started. After setting up the ring, I guess I really wanted to do it then. So my father says, well, you know, if you're going to do it, then we'll see if you really want it that bad. And we'll send you to the dojo in Japan. So I was in the dojo in New Japan for 4 years.
And how tough was that? I've heard, like, horror stories about how hard they worked, you guys.
Yeah, it was it was basically a boot camp. You know, you train about 11 hours a day.
Wow.
And it's kind of brutal. It's shooting and calisthenics, amateur wrestling, and professional wrestling all in one day. So you're pretty wiped out. Everybody the first day has to start at 1,000 squats, 1,000 push-ups, and I don't know if you've ever done squats, but if you do 1,000 without stopping, your first day and not used to it, your legs will give out and you start falling down, you know, uncontrollably because your legs are just dead pretty much. And so my first day, that's what we did, 1,000 of them. And then we did 500 jump squats. And I tell you what, I could not move. I could not do anything after that. We were just, it was awful. In fact, I did it with Hulk back in the dojo, in Hiromatsu's dojo. And we had to do 1,000 the first day and 500 jump squats. And it was really rough. I mean, you know, they wanted to see if Hulk really wanted it. So. And he did. I tell you what, he didn't quit it. He didn't whine, you know. But, I mean, it was hard for him, but he definitely did it, you know. So,
well, that's cool. When you left Japan and you came back to the U.S., you started off in the CWA. And if I'm not mistaken, one of your first tag team partners is actually Jeff Jarrett. And how did you enjoy teaming with Jarrett and moving back to the CWA?
Well, again, before I started in CWA, I was with Crockett Promotions.
Yeah.
For a year and a half with Dusty Rhodes. When I came back from Japan, in fact, he was on the last tour with me, and he had told me when I was in the he goes, you got to get out of here. Man, he goes, this stuff is nuts, you know. So anyway, he says, come on back to States. He goes, I'll give you a job right away. So he gave me a job in Crockett Promotions. And I was working with Denny Brown, one of the greatest. Downtown Denny Brown and Jim Crockett Promotions for the Junior Heavyweight Championship. Yeah, I guess I worked with a lot of greats. Ron Starr, you know, Manny Fernandez. Crusher Khrushchev, which was Barry Darso. I got to work with a lot of great workers at that time. Buddy Landell, you know, really, really was a great time for me.
Couture, go ahead, Couture.
I believe you were probably Jeff Jarrett's first regular tag team partner when he broke into business. I guess that would be in 86 in Memphis. What are your memories of Jeff
right.
Jarrett?
Yeah. And, Jeff Jarrett, he was breaking into business. He was a referee when I came in. And they said they wanted to break in Jeff. So Sato and Goto were the tag team, Japanese tag team then. And they said, hey, why don't we do an angle with him? You know, he'll be the referee, and we'll just get the shit out of him. I said, I'll go hit the ring on him, and that's how we became partners. You know, we worked an angle right into it, and then I turned on Jeff, you know, after that. And what a worker he became, you know. And
yeah.
Great work still is today.
And then not that much longer, you actually became a detective that you're best well known for. And what were your thoughts when when they put Bat Company together? And what were your thoughts on your partner Paul Diamond?
Oh wow! You know, I mean, me and Paul, when we became partners, you know what? Pretty much we had a great chemistry together, you know, and. My gosh, right off the bat, you know, we really, really could go together, you know. So I figured, you know, my gosh, you know, we got something good here, so we stuck to it, and we were tag team for a lot of years after that.
Yeah, right before you guys started teaming, a little before, I actually got to see Paul Diamond and Shawn Michaels, and they were I don't know if Paul was breaking in, but Shawn was just breaking in, and I always thought Paul was really awesome, and when I got to see you guys in the AWA, I thought I was pretty excited. And you guys had some awesome matches with the Rockers, and can you tell us about some of those matches?
Oh wow! Well, I mean, you know, it's like I have always said, you know, Shawn Michaels, Marty Jannetty, you know, two of the best workers in the business, and working with them, oh my gosh, you know, it was just like. Too good to be true. I mean, you work with guys like that, it's hard to have a bad match, you know, honestly. They were a fine-tuned tag team, and Paul got along with Shawn really well. And that was good, and me and Marty were friends at the time, so we were really just fluent in our matches, and we had great, great, great matches with them, because they were so great. They really were. Incredible. Tag team.
Go ahead, Craig.
When they first brought you into the AWA, they put you with Diamond Dallas Page and the Diamond Doll. I was watching some interviews, some promos you guys were cutting on YouTube yesterday, and man, what a team you guys were. I know Page kind of got into the game a little bit late, but you got any good Diamond Dallas stories for us?
Yeah, Dallas was, he was incredible on the mic. You know, pretty much as you can see, me and Paul, we definitely were no interview guys. We couldn't do a promo to save our lives, you know. So definitely, we needed a manager through our whole career. We were the worst on the mic. And But we got lucky. We got the best manager ever was Diamond Dallas Page, you know. What a crazy guy. I mean, he was a great manager. And, you know, his cockiness was part of why he was so great, you know. I mean, he could talk and he delivered, you know, with the girls. He always had different girls with him, and it was great for us as a tag team.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some fantastic looking skinny ties and tie-dye jeans on some of those old promos. It just brought back some old high school memories for me.
Were you surprised with
how big of a star he became in WCW?
What's that?
Were you surprised with how big of a star he became in WCW in the late 90s?
Not at all. No, Dallas was a self-driven animal. You know, what he aimed for, he was going to get. You know, and he always said, you know, that was his dream to become a professional wrestler. And even, you know, I said, wow, you know, starting that late in the game at his age to be a professional wrestler, that's going to be quite a feat. But you know what? He did it, you know, incredibly. And what a success story he is for this business.
Yeah.
But also, you know, he was our manager, and that looked kind of awkward. You know, you got two small guys and our managers towering over us at all times.
Now, when you were the AWA Tag Team Champions, it was kind of toward the end of the AWA's run as a promotion. And I was always curious, how was when you guys were on top of the tag team champs, how was business at the time, and how did you feel the future was for the AWA at the time?
Well, when we first got in there, you know, Walter McDaniels, Ray Stevens, they were running it, you know, with Greg, and it was, I mean, we did great all over the country for house shows. It was awesome, you know. But, you know, I mean, I think, you know, after, WWE was getting so huge at that time, at the same time, that it was overshadowing pretty much every company in the United States. So if you weren't WWE, you were going under. That was pretty much the taker.
Did Byrne just know that it was coming to an end, or do you think he just kind of lost touch of what his fans wanted at the time?
No, you know, I pretty much think that, if you look at our business, it's always been, you know, going down to the bottom and then coming back up, making that comeback. You know, and our business has always been that way, where it drops off to where it's almost going to die, and then it makes that big comeback. And our business has always been that way since the 30s, you know. I'm just going by the history. I watched the history of professional wrestling, you know. And I've always seen where it's almost going to die, and then, you know, our business makes a big comeback at some point, you know. But in AWA's case, it really never recovered. I think we got it out there at the right time.
And besides your match with the Rockers, another famous AWA match is actually a match from the, I guess you could call it the infamous Superclash Street Card, and where you actually teamed with, you and Paul teamed with Medusa Michelli against the Top Guns and Whitney Richter. And what were your thoughts of the match and the whole event? And just like, do you have any stories from backstage of that show?
Well, I mean, I really thought it was a big mistake. I mean, you know, because, gosh almighty, you know, you got a big pay-per-view like that, you would think that they'd want just an ass-kicking, incredible match, and we could have done that with the Rockers, you know, because we didn't work so much. I'm not putting down Tom Paul or, you know, Ricky Rice. They were great workers, but, you know, when you have, you know, the Rockers, I mean, you would rather see that match anyway, especially in a pay-per-view. You know, even if it was with Wendy and Medusa, you know, he should have thrown him with them, an accomplished tag team, instead of a brand new tag team. You know, I don't know if you watched it at that time, but they were pretty green, and, you know, it was hard for them to do a pay-per-view like that.
I think they also changed partners just right before the pay-per-view.
Derek Dukes.
That pay-per-view is the reason why I had to get a part-time job in school, and so I could start paying for pay-per-views, because my mother was such a Kerry Von Erich fan, she was so disgusted and pissed off by the ending, she refused to ever buy me a pay-per-view again. I just mentioned Kerry Von Erich. There's a lot of stories about what was going on with Kerry backstage, where I think he supposedly even accidentally bladed himself. I know you're probably in a different dressing room, but did you see what was going on with Kerry, or do you have any thoughts on what a lot of people say was going on at the time?
Well, I'd grown up with Kerry and all of them. Because our father worked against each other, and I worked with all of them. And, you know, Kerry was the sweetest and kindest guy you have ever met in your life, you know? Just like any other wrestler. I mean, we all had our problems, you know? And I think it was, his father was pretty rough on the whole family, you know? And I'm not saying it was his fault, but his father was very demanding. I put a lot of pressure on the kids, and in the back, Kerry was just one of those guys that was happy-go-lucky, but, you know, it was very, unhappy inside, you know, all the time, you know. And he turned to a lot of things that, you know, try to help him through those times, and that is pretty much what killed him, you know. But to tell you the truth, I mean, these are the times of, you know, our lives that, you know, that changed what we were all about. You know, the business was so innocent. Well, never innocent, but we were innocent at the time coming into where we were going to be terrors, you know, because we became such bad, I guess, dependent on getting by on drugs and things like that in the business that, you know, it destroyed a lot of our lives and a lot of our careers.
And you said you kind of grew up with Yvonne Erickson. I guess that must have been a hard thing to witness over the years, just a tragedy. I mean, I was a big fan, and I remember just being torn up as a kid when David and Mike and them, you know, started to pass away.
Exactly. I was with David in Japan at the time. He was with All Japan. I was with New Japan. And he had died in the hotel. And I remember it so clearly. You know, it was Bruiser Brody, myself. I'm trying to think who else was there. It was just so many of us. Dick Murdoch, all of us were there when he passed away. And I remember we had a funeral for him there. And we had for him when we got back. You know, so it was such a tragedy. You know, I mean, the whole family. You know, the only one still alive is Kevin. And I tell you what, I mean, you lose that many people, especially for one family. That's just a tragedy. You know.
He's made some appearance on WWE TV, and he still looks fantastic.
It's unbelievable. They all looked incredible. Everyone looked like Tarzan, you know?
Totally.
Incredible bodies, everything.
Go ahead, Craig.
You know, you're talking a lot about the Von Erichs and their passing. You know, is that a point in your life that woke you up? Or did it happen much later?
The Von Erichs?
Yeah, with their passing.
Is that
what you're talking about? Yeah, with them passing, is that what put an idea into your head to, you know, maybe quit living the lifestyle you were living, or did it come later in your life?
Oh, no. I mean, at that point in our lives, we were pretty much everybody. I mean, well, I'm not speaking for everybody. I'm speaking for myself. I mean, well, I was destroying my life either way. And I tell you what, it took a lot of years for me to really understand the consequences of my actions, you know. And I tell you what, I mean, I'm still paying today for them, you know. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wow, I wish I could explain, you know, everything it's done to me, but, you know, it's just been one hard road.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, back on a better topic, you joined the World Wrestling Federation. You joined the World Wrestling Federation in 1990, and they put you together with Sato, and you were managed by Mr. Fuji. And you're called the Orient Express, even though you're born in Hawaii, but that's another story for another time. And a match that I watched just yesterday, again, WrestleMania 6, you and the Rockers, and this was the kickoff for your feud. First of all,
exactly.
What's it like working in a WrestleMania atmosphere in front of that many people?
What do you think? It's pretty damn incredible.
Well, I've been in the crowd at WrestleMania.
Everybody's dream, right?
I can't even imagine,
you know,
being in the ring.
Yeah, 87,000 people, and that's not even including the pay-per-view that we did that night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just remarkable. You know what I mean? Oh, wow. What an honor. And that's what
no
I
doubt.
Have to say about it. It's an honor. You know?
And we had a great match, too.
Great match.
You know what? We did. And, I was very happy with that match, you know, against the Rockers. And, you know, because you go out there, and it's not like just a regular night, you know. You're definitely under the gun all the time, you know. So, I mean, you know, you pretty much go within their time limit, you know. But we had been working together so long, the Rockers and I, and Paul, and we pretty much knew exactly, you know, what to do in every situation, no matter how long the match was. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they gave us 5 minutes, you know, we knew what to do. If they gave us, you know, 40 to an hour, we knew what to do. We worked that much together, so it was awesome, you know.
Couture, go ahead, Couture.
Yeah, how did it come about with Sato leaving and Paul Diamond coming in as Kato to replace him?
Well, Sato was working in the office in Japan, and he also worked in the office for Vince. So he had, he was under a lot of stress at work and everything. He had a family at home, never saw them, and it was hard for them. So he took a bow out, and I asked for Paul to come in. I think pretty much they were going to end the Orient Express at that time. And I had asked Vince, I said, can you bring in Paul, you know, to see, you know, if we can stay as a tag team, because I really would like him. He's a fantastic worker. We've been working together for years, and I said, is it possible? And he says, where is he? And he says, get him on the phone. And that's all it took. And I remember our first night together was Cape Girardeau in Missouri. And we tore down the house and against the Rockers, and because it was just like second nature to work with the Rockers. So we tore it down, and Vince said, yeah, you guys do it up. And I remember I asked Vince, can I take off my shoes, you know, my boots? Because they had made me put on boots, you know. And he says, yeah, if they'll make you work better. And I said, please. everything, and it was great. My gosh, you know, to work on my boots, so it was awesome, you know.
Now, I guess the match that the team is most known for is that 1991 Royal Rumble match with the Rockers. What do you remember about that? Because that's still one of the best tag team matches I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. That's what they say. Pretty much every time anybody says anything, that's the match they talk about. You know, it's the most talked about match. It was the 91 Royal Rumble against the Rockers. And I tell you what, we thought, and when we were walking out, we thought we had 6 minutes, and then when we were going to the ring, they said, no, you got 29 minutes.
Wow.
You know, so what a difference, you know? So we had to change up everything in the middle of, you know, and when we were out there. So it was pretty different, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that way, that quickly, wow. You know, it was very hard, but it was awesome. We called everything out there.
Would you put that at the top of all your matches with the Rockers that you've ever had, or
was that the best one?
Yeah. Do you think that was the best one you guys ever had with the Rockers?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Now when Paul came into the WWE, was there any talk of you guys just being bad company or another name, or did they know right away that they were going to put a mask on Paul and they were going to continue the Orient Express? And whose idea was the mask?
It was Vince's idea. They definitely couldn't go with bad company. They had told me for, I guess it was I don't know, from the rock band back. I mean, I don't think we could have used that name. Even though we used two D's on the end of Bad, you know, it still was too much like that. And plus we used their music and things like that. I think Vince wanted to create everything at the time. And pretty much just creating everybody's name.
How did Paul enjoy working under the mask?
He was fine with it, you know. He said it was hard to breathe and things like that, but you know what, he's in shape and, you know, he was always never out of shape or anything like that, so it was fine for him. If I was under a mask, it would be a different story. You know, we definitely could only go 2 or 3 minutes in the match, so.
Now, one more question about Paul. You know, he's, like I say, I watched him, well, him and Sean when they just broke in here in San Antonio, and you guys pretty much shadowed each other for a few years. Now, in the next few years to come, Sean would start to break out and become a really, really big star. Was there any, you said that him and Paul got along, and I know that Paul actually trained at his wrestling school, but did Paul ever have any, like, I don't want to say maybe, like, jealousy, or did he, like, just, like, you know, why not me, or anything like that when he saw Sean was becoming a bigger star than himself?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that part. Did he have any jealousy towards who? Stage?
Maybe a resentment that Sean was becoming a super, you know, a super, super big star while he wasn't.
I really don't want to comment on something like that, you know. Me and Sean never really were that great of friends, but I always thought that he was probably the greatest worker in this business. There's no doubt about it. Him and Marty were by far the greatest workers in this business, you know. And Paul, I think he thought when Sean was going to go that high that, you know, Sean was going to take care of him, you know, and bring him up there with him. I don't know that personally, but, I would imagine that's what he thought because they were pretty good friends.
Like, I wasn't, like, trying to ask because there was, like heat. I was just, like, maybe, like, asking about, you know, since they're so close and such a good team and, you know, one career just went a little higher, maybe, like, you know, I'm sure, you know, Paul wanted to be, you know, as big a superstar as he could possibly be.
Well, yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, that's pretty much, you know, everybody's dream, you know. I think they're okay because Paul worked with Sean in San Antonio. They opened a school together.
Yeah, the Texas Wrestling Alliance.
And they had a falling out after that. As far as I know. But, I know there was a little bit of jealousy, but, I mean, nothing to where they were going to get in an argument or, you know, Paul would sabotage his career or anything.
Okay.
Let's be honest, I'm a little bit jealous of Shawn Michaels. Come on now.
Why is that?
Well, he's just a huge star, and I'm talking on the phone. Anyway, 93, you started. 93, you started working for Eastern Championship Wrestling, which of course turned into Extreme Championship Wrestling. What was it like working with Paul Heyman?
Well, Paul was my manager. Did you know that? And
I did know that.
For a brief time, and Jared's promotion,
okay.
And me and Paul's manager, in fact, and it was, he was pretty incredible, you know that. Paul Heyman
still is.
Was an incredible manager, and we worked for him for ECW at the ECW Arena, and we were the first ones there, in fact, against Public Enemy.
Yep.
And what a time we had with him. I mean, what Paul did with that company was incredible. Don't you think? I mean, he raised that, you know, like a backyard wrestling team to the most incredible company there was. You know, from what he brings up.
His ability to take really not so much talent and get that over just floors me to this day. How he can take people like Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge and turn them into superstars.
Absolutely.
The bad breed. Ian and Axel Rotten, not the greatest technical wrestlers in the world by far. And somehow this man got everything he could out of him. He's an incredible, incredible booker.
Oh, my God. He was awesome. You know? I mean, what a genius Paul was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was just an absolute genius, you know, when it came down to professional wrestling. You know? I guess things change, you know, and when he got into WWE, he definitely changed, you know, from wanting to be so creative, or maybe they put a cap on him, you know, and said, you know, you need to calm this down or calm that down, but he was such a great creative mind in his business, but, you know, I guess when he was in WWE, maybe they put a cap on him where they said, you know, you got to cool it, you know.
Right.
Because he was incredible.
Yeah. In the documentary, Beyond the Mat, they show part of, like, basically a pep-up talk that he gives before their ECW first pay-per-view. And I was wondering, how many of those did you see when you were in the locker room?
You know what? Pretty much, I mean, that was an every night thing with Paul. He had so much charisma in the dressing room. I remember, you know, just taking little tiny things, you know, and making them seem like, oh, my God, this is huge, you know. One night I broke my ankle, and, oh, my God, what do you think he did? He made it seem like, oh, wow, you know, he broke his neck or whatever because, you know, he had cameras in the hospital, everything. I had to ask him, please, 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 man, get these cameras out of here. It's so embarrassing, you know. He broke my leg. He acts like I'm dying or something, you know. Oh, gosh, he was crazy about that kind of stuff, you know. And he made it, you know, it was like a true soap opera. His life is a true soap opera, you know. He would make every little thing into something huge. But that's how he made his company so big.
Mm. Now, what's it like working in front of the South Philadelphia crew? Those fans were nuts.
I loved it. They were the best. Absolutely, man. Oh, I just couldn't wait. I mean, they were so awesome to work in front of. Because they were definitely into it. You know what I'm saying? I mean, wow. I mean, they just were, like, so into it that, you know, you had to work hard. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you had to.
Yeah. Yeah, because if you screwed up, they'd sure let you know it. Man.
Oh, my God. They were ruthless, you know?
Yeah.
But you know what, though? And for me, gosh, you know, I could do no wrong with that crowd. They really, for some reason, took a liking to me. And I wasn't that great. I mean, especially in hardcore, you know, that wasn't my deal. You know, I was just, you know, crazy-ass bumper. And in that thing, they wanted guys to do triple flips off a ladder, you know?
Yeah.
Just crazy stuff, you know? And but they took a liking to me, and it was just, they made it easy for me. And I really like that, you know.
Couture, go ahead, Couture.
Now, I know you competed at the infamous The Night the Line Was Crossed in ECW, and you actually got to be a tag team partner of the original Sheik against Kevin Sullivan and Tasmaniac, who, of course, became Taz. What do you remember about teaming with the Sheik for this one time?
Oh, my God. You know, I mean, that was incredible, you know. To be his partner. I mean, God almighty, you know, he was the biggest legend in the business. And here we are doing an angle in ECW with the Sheik, you know. It's incredible. And And I remember that night, and I you know, it was just like, wow, what a great guy. We had a great time, and he just made it fun, you know. Wasn't serious, nothing. He, let's have a good time, Pat. You know, he had worked with my father, so another one, you know. So I ran into a lot of guys that had to work with my dad, so.
Now, a lot of people have, like, the opinion that the Sheik was pretty much always in character, and I was just curious, how was he backstage?
He was great. I mean, to me, I mean, he was, you know, he just was a regular guy. I mean, he never worked his character back there with me or anything like that, and there was a lot of guys that did, you know?
Oh, yeah.
They lived their character and would be that way in the dressing room, and I would just look at him and go, hello. Hold on, Russell. Well, I know you're a little man. You know, I mean, we're like, you know, sorry, you can't fool me,
right?
You know, but some of the guys really believed in their character, and they thought that they were who they really were in the dressing room. And some of them changed their name on the driver's license, the whole thing. They got their passports changed, everything. You know, that's going a little bit far, you know. You know,
changing your name to Warrior or something like that?
Yeah. You know, unbelievable, you know. You got it. Like, I'm like, wow, you know. And I never changed my name, you know. It was always my shoot name. And I don't know. I just for me, I mean, I couldn't see changing my name, you know, so I don't know, maybe the guy didn't make it.
Now, that night you worked with the Sheik, Shane Douglas gave his famous speech where he threw down the NWA title.
Now, that was a different show, Craig.
Was that the different show?
Yeah, I don't remember
that. That was a different show.
I didn't even think he was there at that time.
Oh, my bad.
The night the line was crossed
was
the famous Sabu, Terry Funk, and Shane Douglas three-way match.
Oh, my bad. I apologize. I will be better informed next time.
No worries. I just always, when you said that, I was going, I thought he was like a couple years after that.
Okay.
You know, so maybe I'm wrong, but I just don't remember him there at that time.
And from ECW, you went into WCW in 94, and Bad Company was rejoined, and they gave you the name Tanaka-san. Again, you're Hawaiian.
Well, the thing was that everybody wanted me to be a Japanese character. They didn't want, you know, the old, you know, Bad Company deal. I mean, because when I came up with that gimmick years ago, the reason I became Bad Company with Paul was because I love the song, you know, Bad Company. I mean, it's all about our business, you know, and we were born in the business, you know, and we lived the gimmick, you know, and I always thought, what a cool name that would be. And so I went to Jared with that idea, and he goes, yeah, do whatever you want. And he bought us our outfits, everything. We picked them out, and he says, yes, absolutely. We'll pay for them, you know. And for Jared to do something like that was pretty incredible, you know. He definitely wouldn't pay for anybody's outfits, you know, let alone, you know, help us out with that gimmick, you know. It was great, you know. And then when we went to WCW, they definitely weren't going to go for anything like that. In fact, the reason they bring me in was not to work. It was really to train people. That was my job. You know, so it really wasn't to work or anything like that. My job was strictly to train all the guys. You know, I had, Kidman was already a great worker, and he was in the back with me. Chris Canyon, another great worker, he was in the back with me. And they were all in my little group there, you know. And I had Goldberg, and all of them back there with me, and Glacier was my main project, you know. They put me with him because they wanted me to get him ready for, you know, his new gimmick, you know. My whole career was karate. So he says, you know, let Tanaka work out with him, you know, get that gimmick over. So that was my basic job there, you know, working with Glacier.
Did Goldberg, I was going to ask, did Goldberg, you know, skip a few classes, or what happened to him?
No, you know, Bill was, I mean, what they did with Bill was basically, I mean, he was, I say, wasn't he skip class? You know, they were just going to push him, I mean, immediately. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
He had the look, he had the charisma, you know, and, you know, to be honest with you, he had, he'd already been a football player, you know, so he had, you know, big push with that before, and he wasn't that bad, guys, you know.
Yeah.
He
wasn't great in the ring.
What's that?
He just wasn't great in the ring. That's why I made the joke about skipping class.
Right. Well, I mean, if you think about it, the guy only got a year of training before they gave him a huge push.
Yeah, they gave him the shove right
away. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So you can't expect a guy to be an incredible worker after a year, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Heck, I mean, you know, a lot of guys been working 30 years and still can't tie their boots. You know?
Yeah.
You know? But, it's not his fault. I mean, what is he going to do? Turn down? You know?
Oh, yeah.
Right? I mean, absolutely. I mean, the guy got, you know, a break, and he ran with it. You know, so, I mean.
And he
had to go off that.
He carried the ball when they gave it to him. I mean, he got over like $1 million.
You ain't kidding, man. It's like I said, you know, I mean, he wasn't, you know, technically great, but, man, he had that charisma.
Yeah. And then there's a, you brought up Glacier, and I wanted to bring up that because they promoted that kind of storyline or what was going on for weeks, and they actually had these cool vignettes. And it actually looked like it was going to be something cool. Unfortunately, when it translated to when they introduced him and brought out the characters, it just didn't click, and they had to seem to give up on him kind of early. What were your thoughts on that whole Blood Runs Cold and all of that?
Well, you know, I mean, the thing about Glacier's deal, you know, my gosh, dude, wow, did they spend some serious money, you know, on getting him over. And they spent, you know, $100,000 just on that light show.
And his outfit. You know,
wow.
And all the Lakers and all that kind of stuff. And you know what? You're trying to push something, a sci-fi movie in professional wrestling ain't going to work. You know? And something like that where you got laser beams. Because, honestly, you know, you're not going to use it in the ring, you know, to beat anybody with a laser beam. You know, I mean, that's basically what it was that they were trying to push, you know, these lasers and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. And I'm going, it's going to be hard to beat somebody with that, you know. You know, I mean, you know where I'm coming from. It's sci-fi.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't really... You know, it was just something that was controversial. You know, you really couldn't push, you know, him beating anybody with light. So,
it was also that time the NWO was big, was getting hot, and it was like more realism in wrestling was getting hot. And so you bring like something like that in, it kind of, I don't know, it's kind of a little counterproductive to what your main angle is, I guess. One looks so phony, but one angle just looks so real.
You know, and that was the thing with Glacier. He was the greatest guy, the sweetest guy I ever met, and was a dedicated athlete, put his heart and soul into that character. But you knew the character wasn't going to go anywhere, you know? That was the thing. I mean, well, no one knew that. I mean, but after it aired, you knew that... he wasn't going to get over. You could tell by the crowd's reaction the first night that he was in the ring. He wasn't going to get over because of the simple fact that I don't know. I mean, it just was too much. You know, they pushed it, and boom, it didn't get over, so they ended that one really quick. I can tell you that first night, that, you know, they weren't going to go with it, you know. I knew it was over before it started. So that was one of the big deals there, you know. You got Glacier, and he was such a great athlete, you know, that they pushed him so hard, and then it went nowhere, you know, and it was a shame. It really was.
Now, you had also mentioned Canyon, working with Canyon in the back, and unfortunately, you know, he's no longer with us, but he was such an awesome and innovative worker at the time. What are your thoughts on Chris Canyon?
Chris Canyon was incredible worker. I mean, the guy could do, I mean, anything in the ring, you know? And I thought that they really should have done something with Chris. I mean, really, really should have. I mean, he should have been working, you know, with the top guys there. There's no doubt about it. Because he had the talent. He did, you know. But I guess, you know, someone had it in the back of their mind and they were going to help him, you know. And it's a shame because our business is very political.
Now, okay, could you talk a little more about that? Because, you know, we've heard stories about how WCW was in those years with, like, a lot of, you know, Eric Bischoff or Kevin Nash, and just a lot of power struggles. And since you were backstage, what was the atmosphere like? I mean, what was just your opinion on how everything played out backstage that pretty much led to the downfall of a company that was making millions of dollars 1 year and then losing millions the next year?
Well, I mean, you know, you're asking me to comment on something that, you know, very touchy situation. I mean, because pretty much, I mean, these guys that were getting pushed, I mean, honestly, you got Kidman, right? Oh, my God. But he was sensational. That guy, he had charisma, he had everything, he could work, man. That's the main thing there, you know. And a good guy, you know. So, but then you got, I don't want to name any names, you got guys that were pushed so strong and so hard, you know, that they didn't deserve it. You know for a fact, right?
Oh, yeah.
You know, it was a political game, you know, where these guys were getting pushed so hard. But they didn't deserve it. And you knew it. I knew it. But you know what? That's our business. You know, that's what the business has succumbed to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Who you're going to be friends with. And whose ass you're going to kiss. You know?
Yep.
It's a shame. It really is, you know?
Well, Pat, you've been with us for quite a while, so we'll go ahead and start to wrap up. So, Craig, if you have any last questions, go ahead.
What are you doing now?
We have me and Johnny Attitude. He was from WCW. He was there with me, and Brian Knobbs and Hulk Hogan. We have a new deal now that we're coming out with a new reality series. Airs on True TV, and it's going to be in August. And you have to watch it. It's called Hulk Hogan's MCW. And it's, I think you guys will like it. I'm not going to tell you.
Micro Championship Wrestling? Is that what it's called?
What's that?
Micro Championship Wrestling? Is that what it is?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yes. You guys got to watch it. It's funny, and it kicks ass, and I think it's going to do well. You know, we just finished our episodes and our pilot, and it airs on True TV in August. So, you know, please watch it, keep updated with it, and we'll be on soon. We're doing Full Throttle again. We did it last year, you know. So hopefully you guys will follow us on that. And it's been a pleasure being on the air with you guys tonight. Thank you very much for thinking of me. And hopefully we can do it again soon. especially after my show airs. I think you guys will love it.
Sounds all good, right, man. Yeah, thanks so much, Pat. I really appreciate you spending time with us and being open and honest. I appreciate that.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
no
thank
problem,
you for...
Thank you.
Yeah, so guys, keep it up, and we'll see you next time.
We'll see you.
So, man, take it easy, Pat.
All right, thank you, guys. Take care.
You bet.
Have a good one.
Again, it's always, awkward wrapping up our interviews.
Well, I mean, that was great. I didn't even realize they were so far into it. I just looked at the timer, and I'm like, oh, wow, we've almost been an hour. So hope you didn't mind staying too long. But, yeah, that was actually pretty great.
We'll have to work on Craig's knowledge of facts and stuff like that pretty soon.
So. Yeah, I'm really sorry about that. It was called Crossing the Line, correct? It was just like the last, the year after that, or it was years later?
I think it was the summer of 94.
When
he threw the title down, that's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, well, what are you going to do? I'm reading Wikipedia trying to act like I know what I'm talking about.
Well, you know I have to correct you. That's just my way.
Well, that's fine. We don't want to spread mistruths on this show like other programs.
Plus,
but anyway.
It puts me over more that I know what I'm talking about, so.
Yeah, well, obviously, you're the brains of the operation. You're the brains of the operation. I'm the smooth talker that gets people on the phone. And what do you do, Ed? Never mind. Anyway.
I draw everybody to the show. I am the drawer.
Right.
Yep. But anyway, I do know the story. I do know the story of Shawn Michaels and Paul Diamond's breakup, if you guys would like to hear that.
I don't think let's save it for another time. Some of Paul's friends are going to be listening to this, and let's save it for another time.
Okay, that's no problem. I've actually told the story before. I used to have a supervisor who wasn't even a wrestling fan, but he lived next to Paul, and he kind of told me the story, but I guess I'll save that for another time. It's not really that bad. But yeah, we'll save it for another time.
Just like I said.
Yeah. But well, I remember... Oh, go ahead, Craig.
I was going to say, we got news to wrap up the show if you want to do that, Ed.
Yep. Oh, okay, let's do that.
Okay. So this last Sunday was Money in the Bank, and there was a lot of big news coming out of that. Excuse you. A lot of big news coming out of that. CM Punk won the WWE title from John Cena at Money in the Bank, and as promised, he left the company with the title. Cena had Punk in the STF, and Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis came down to the ring. They were doing the old Montreal screwjob finish. Cena jumped out of the ring, and when I say decked John Laurinaitis, he actually hit him. And
I'm sure about 50 people backstage popped.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, Cena said he didn't want to win that way, and he got back in the ring and was met by a GTS by Punk and was pinned. Vince tried to send Alberto down to the ring. Alberto was kicked and rendered unconscious, and Punk scurried from the ring and escaped through the crowd with championship belt in tow.
Yeah, I think that was the best match John Cena's ever had, at least. And probably Punk's best WWE match, I think.
Well, he had an awesome one with Chris Jericho. I'd have to go back and watch that one again. It was awesome.
I don't think
but one thing that kind of freaked me out, as I mentioned it on the show, is I never snapped to where Colt Cabana was, and then when I watched it again, you see Colt Cabana like 20 times almost, and I thought that was actually pretty funny. What shocked me, though, is that was, what's the other guy, Ace Steel, or the other member of the, if I'm not mistaken, didn't we watch him wrestle in Houston? I mean, that did not look like the same guy that we saw wrestle in Houston.
With a name like Ace Steel, there's
Ace
probably
Steel
a couple.
The fake Donald Trump, right?
The what?
The fake Donald Trump, and when his match with Rosie on Raw, wasn't that an Ace Steel?
I think it might have been, actually.
I think it was.
Look at the big brain on Couture. Nice job.
Mm-hmm.
Also, coming out of the Money in the Bank, Daniel Bryan won the SmackDown portion of Money in the Bank. If you haven't watched SmackDown yet, fast forward a couple seconds, because he announced he was catching his championship briefcase in at WrestleMania 28 in Miami. I'm pretty stoked about that. And as I said before, Alberto Del Rio actually won his Money in the Bank match for the Raw portion. And I'm sure we'll be cashing that in this Monday as Rey Mysterio faces The Miz in the finals that took place last Monday night. Also on that show, Vince McMahon was removed from power and replaced by one Triple H. On Raw, Vince was about to fire John Cena when Triple H returned and said there was an emergency board of directors meeting earlier in the day. The board came to a vote of no confidence. And Triple H was replaced Vince McMahon, and these two put on one heck of an acting clinic. Okay, just Vince, who actually began to cry. And as Katrina and I were talking just a little bit ago, the thank you Vince chant that came at the end of the show actually brought a tear to this eye.
You know, I think that thank you Vince chant would. That came about, I think, because people could see he was, like, tearing up, really. They felt bad, and they were doing the na-na-na song. Yeah.
That was great. But to go back to the pay-per-view, I'm sure I was one of hundreds and hundreds of smarts who marked out like a little girl when Daniel Bryan won the Money in the Bank.
Yeah, because he was, like, the last person I thought would win.
Oh, yeah, totally.
I figured Sheamus would win, but when Bryan got that, I was like, oh, shit. I started jumping up and down for joy. And I also remember squealing in horror as Evan Bourne tried the Shooting Star Press on top of that ladder. But when I watched it the second time, you clearly see Rey Mysterio hauling ass to grab the other side of the ladder and hold it down. So he didn't die when he did the move.
It's such a tremendous pay-per-view.
With the whole Punk thing, it kind of gives me a little confidence. Maybe they will go through with having Bryan cash it in at WrestleMania. Because it just seems they're going in a totally different direction with some of these guys. So
it looks like they're planning for the future.
Yeah.
It looks like
that's amazing.
Well, actually, you remember a few weeks ago, or I don't know how long it was, Dave talked about they hired some big shot Emmy award-winning soap opera writer. And maybe they're giving this guy a chance to actually kind of take control and actually, you know, maybe the way how they work things in the back may be changing a little bit, where they're trying to make long story arcs instead of going week by week. Because the TV has been better the last few months, if you really think about it.
Yeah, it looks like Hunter's already, I don't want to say in charge, but it looks like he's got his hands in things already. And I think that's a good thing. And Vince, you know, okay, he wrestled, but he was never a worker.
Yeah.
And Triple H knows how to work. He knows the business. He knows what fans like. And I'm just happy they're saying wrestling again on my WWE program.
Yeah, and you know, with how long Triple H has been out, you know, just doing the Taker match and stuff like that, I kind of got a little bit more confidence that he'll, you know, in angles like this, he'll do the right thing when it comes to who goes over and stuff like this, because I really don't think it's that big of a deal to him anymore. It doesn't seem like that to me with how long
he's been out. I think as long as he's not booking himself, he'll be just fine.
Mm. Yeah, because when those bookers start knowing... You know, when bookers start booking themselves, all of a sudden the title is back on them. It's weird how that happens. Moving on in news, because we're running out of time, Sin Cara failed a wellness test and got suspended for 30 days, if not longer. Of course, if you did see the Money in the Bank pay-per-view, you saw Sin Cara getting powerbombed through a, by the way, very gimmicked ladder. But his injury angle, he'll be out for 30 days. I hope they bring him back, but after he shot off his mouth to a Mexican newspaper,
jackass.
It's hard to say what they're going to do with Sin Cara and what they're going to do with those hundreds and hundreds of thousands of little Sin Cara masks that will not be sold at the arenas.
And whether they release him or not, he still gets paid. And if I'm not mistaken, he's getting quite a pretty penny because they paid quite a bit to get him. I hope this shit gets strained out. There's been people who have failed way more drug tests than him. He's not from the country. He don't even speak the language. You got to cut him a little bit of slack. Okay, you should have had him. You should have had him before he debuted, kind of like take some English classes and just maybe just some things on how shit works here.
Kind of just throw him out there.
Yeah, just kind of throw him out there. So I hope he comes back. I mean, he is actually pretty phenomenal. But we'll see. And unfortunately, he burnt his bridge with CMLL, so...
Oh, yeah.
You know, they mentioned him going to TNA, and I'm like, I hope they got not Ring of Honor, and that would be another story.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But,
no doubt.
Yeah. But I don't know. We'll see. I hope they bring him back. They deserve to give everybody a chance. I mean, you know.
Well, we'll see where that goes. Our next news story, Chavo Guerrero complains he didn't get to be the star of the angle exploiting Eddie Guerrero's death. In an interview on Right After Wrestling Radio, a radio show, Chavo stated, "I always thought WWE really dropped the ball after Eddie passed. I always thought the WWE didn't really want to cash in on Eddie's death. But I remember wrestling Triple H and the fans went crazy for it. But they went with Ray for WrestleMania 22. And I went into Vince's office and told him that could it be me? The fans could really get behind me. And instead, that went into me turning heel and having a great program with Ray." I have no words for this.
So they didn't try to cash in on Eddie's death? Is that what I heard right?
Sure. They totally cashed in on it.
And
they had Ray driving his car down to the ring for many weeks, as I remember.
Chavo's he's a good worker and he can have good matches, but no way he would have fit in that Ray Mysterio spot. He just didn't have the charisma or the style for it.
Yeah. Speaking of ROH, Chavo should really try that.
Yeah, he could do like a Charlie Haas and get reborn. But I was gonna say the fans really were behind him after Eddie died. They really could have pushed him a little more, but it's still Chavo Guerrero. I just don't see him as a main event player. Regardless, I mean, as good as work. I've always been a fan of Charo. I'm probably one of the only person on earth who couldn't wait for the next week for him to be embarrassed by Hornswoggle.
If he was in the NWA in 1986, he'd have been Tim Horner. That's about his level of where it would be.
He should have won some kind of an award for selling that judo chop from spiky chop from Bob Barker.
Bob Barker.
Yeah, that was awesome.
But to cry about that I didn't get the push that I needed because Eddie died, I kind of have a problem with that.
Yeah, that's
the only time we got a push before that was when Eddie was alive and the tag team with him, which was
that was great stuff.
Well, his
I always
look
at that SmackDown 6 with Chris Benoit and Kurt Angle and Rey Mysterio and Edge and Eddie and Chavo, and I said it's like the Sesame Street song. One of these things is not like the other. One of these things
doesn't belong. That's right.
See, actually, I actually loved him in WCW when he had the doing the Pepe gimmick.
Pepe.
And it was absolutely insane. He was actually very awesome at that time.
And Norman Smiley threw him in a wood chipper.
Well, at least they didn't feed him to Al Snow. And our last story, and I had to look at this to believe it myself. Ric Flair has opened an online store. And some of the products include a replica gold belt with Ric Flair's nameplate costing $4,750. You can get a 5-minute phone call for only $495. Or you can get a Skype video call. By the way, I checked in this. again, five minutes on a Skype video call, $750. I don't want to say Ric Flair is desperate for money, but at these prices, one's got to think.
$750, you can at least talk to me for like a couple of hours.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm glad Pat didn't. I'm glad Pat didn't charge us.
Yeah, I just want to know if either one of you guys could loan me $750 because that would be so cool.
I'm telling you, he should charge for chops in the chest because you would have every wrestling mark lined up around the block, you know, $30 a chop, and then have Flair chop you, and you could go and have, you know, your picture with Flair's hand imprint on your chest. I would spend $30 for that.
You missed the other item about CM Punk at the Comic-Con.
I did. I apologize. Yeah, this just happened yesterday, and if you YouTube this, you can find it. I don't know who was doing the video, but he was right behind Punk the whole time, so he must have known something was up. CM Punk disrupts the WWE panel at Comic-Con and confronts Triple H. When he showed up and interrupted, he complained about the tournament to crown a new champion since he was already the champion and directly challenged Rey Mysterio, who was there, to a match in Chicago. He then confronted Triple H and Brian Gewurz about how they weren't using Zack Ryder, and when Triple H said he was in charge of the WWE, he said to call him. He told Triple H that Stephanie already had his number and that Triple H could call him.
That's tremendous.
Okay, this is a big story, but let's talk about the bigger story that I heard Dave talk about on Wrestling Observer Radio the other day, and that is, I know CM Punk's been with a lot of different divas, but he's actually with Beth Phoenix? Really? Wow.
Yep.
Well,
now that's
sometimes you need
sometimes
you need some meat with your potatoes. That's all I'm saying.
And he did used to bang ODB, so I guess he kind of likes, you know, muscular women.
I just threw up in my mouth a little bit.
I don't know if I do ODB, but I do Beth Phoenix.
Mr. Anderson used to be with ODB.
She's hardly woman. the jury's still out, I think. Goodness.
Yeah, the Punk thing, I think they've been playing this pretty well. I mean, it's coming off as legit because WWE aren't the ones reporting all these outside things that Punk's doing. I mean, this is showing up on TMZ and, you know, IGN.com and things like that. And, you know,
or like the photo of the belt in the refrigerator, that was awesome.
Yeah.
Loved that.
I mean, he's playing it really well, like if it was legit or something. So I'm really excited to see where this goes in the next few months.
Of course, the WWE cameras were rolling on the press conference, so I wonder how long it'll be before that turns up. I would imagine, you know, if they didn't show it tonight, I bet you it will be on Monday. I think it's just tremendous where they're going with this. I mean, what do you do? What do you do when you got Punk and you got you know, maybe even Alberto Del Rio as champions? You know, I don't know where they go with it, but maybe a unification match. I hope it's not until, like, Survivor Series. I hope it hangs on that long.
I'm kind of thinking that with Triple H, you know, they did the thing on Monday with Triple H being in charge now, that maybe he's going to make some changes that we're going to see, like, on TV and stuff like that, and maybe that's his way to entice Punk to come back because, like, things are different now. And maybe we'll see Zack Ryder get pushed or, you know, somebody else we don't expect get pushed or something like that, you know. And
well, we already saw Daniel Bryan win Money in the Bank, so, I mean.
And I hope to God he's going to fire that GM on Monday. Get rid of that bullshit. I don't even want to know who it is. Just get rid of it.
Yeah, we don't even have to know.
That's the first thing
you
have to
do.
Fire the GM and take a sledgehammer to his fucking computer or something.
One can only hope.
We're down to 5 minutes here, so let me get the plug out the way. Everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com, along with a lot of other shows, like the Angry Marks Show, the old show, Look at Minutia, and a whole lot more. So everyone check out AngryMarks.com. So we got 5 minutes, so I guess we can start to wrap it up. So any last things you want to talk about here, Craig?
No, I might as well throw out the plug for my my endeavor with Brian Alvarez. If you're looking for a F4W t-shirt, go to the front page of F4WOnline.com and follow the ordering instructions. Today was the last day for pre-orders, but let's be honest, I can't turn in the thing till Monday. So business hours will not let me do it, you know, like now. So if you still want a t-shirt, you got throughout this weekend to get everything in. I'll be putting in the order and won't have much extra. So it should be starting to ship out, I'm hoping, by next Saturday. But it's been pretty good, and looking for more stuff down the line. So support this one, and we'll do more later. Sorry, Stevie, I didn't mean to...
Why is this t-shirt that the maker, the people making the t-shirts, why are they discriminating against large individuals?
Because, see, Ed, as a large individual myself, and you should know this as well, when they make our t-shirts, it takes more material. So, therefore, they cost more. So, what are you going
to
do?
Just to motivate you to lose weight. You can only get a shirt.
It should.
I've actually lost weight, unlike Craig.
Hey, man, I still got one more X to go before I need to. Anyway.
Cool. Well, I don't even know what, to be honest with you. I just ordered 2 shirts today, and I actually have no idea what they even look like, because I think I checked on that thread when you first started it, but I don't even know what you picked, and then I don't know what the VIPs are getting, so it's like, I hope I'm not disappointed when I get the shirt.
Just kayfabe on the VIP, will you? Jeez.
Well, I don't even know. I mean, like I say, I have no clue. I'm just, for all I know, I'm going to get a plain black t-shirt, maybe with an F, a little F4 and a W on.
That gives me a great idea. I'm going to go get one of my old shirts and a marker. Your shirt will be there first, Ed.
Well, did you want to give out how they can reach you or anything like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. If you have questions, you can contact me via my email. It's Candle of Thought, and yes, it's a Pearl Jam reference, candleofthought@msn.com. And I'll tell you exactly how you can have one of these fine, fine t-shirts. And again, don't be fooled. Brian Alvarez is making some cash on this as well.
I thought your email had something to do with a church group or something.
I know, me too. I was like, damn, he's really taking that Christian thing pretty seriously. But, Contreras, we got 2 minutes. Anything you want to talk about before we go here?
No, I got my nephews visiting this week, and we're fixing to go finish our game of Kung Fu Panda on Xbox 360.
Mm.
Okay, that was cool.
A fine film, by the way. Everybody go check out Captain America this weekend. It looks awesome.
Yeah, and there's actually a small chance that I might be in your number one fan, Matt Cleary's town, tomorrow for a couple hours. So, Matt, you might be getting a call from me later.
Stay through the credits, because they show the Avengers trailer at the end.
Oh, really?
Yes.
The what trailer?
The other day. The Avengers.
What trailer? Oh,
the Avengers?
Avengers.
Yeah.
They actually have a trailer out for it? I didn't even know they were in production for it yet.
Yeah, they already got a trailer out.
Oh, awesome. Awesome. I can't wait to see Captain America.
Mm.
I do got to say, Green Lantern, I like Green Lantern, but it was actually, I was expecting way more from it. Yeah, it wasn't that great.
No, the X-Men movie was where it's at, but we are driving this geek bus now. We should get off the geek talk.
I do want to say, I don't know if it was just a bad version that I saw, but I just didn't really get into the new Transformer one too much, so I don't know what all the super, super hype is about that one. So.
It's robots fighting. Of course it'll be good. Come on.
I mean, I liked it, but it's just, you know, I heard so much good feedback that it was good like the first one again and all this, and I guess I was too excited for it. And like I say, the Evil Means by which I watched it was that's the best quality, so I probably need to find a cleaner version of it. So with that, we got 20 seconds to go here, so we will go ahead and end the show, and we will be back next week. And if we have something come up, we will announce it for the show. And
see what I can
talk
do.
Talk to everyone next week. If you're already hung up, he's in such a hurry to get the hell out of here. But we'll talk to everybody next week. Everybody come back. We'll talk to you guys later. Bye-bye.
Peace.
Ah, Johnny Ringo.
What's going on, John?
I love you, Johnny Ringo.
You must be Ringo.
Keep your hand on your gun.
Johnny Ringo. Deadliest pistol ever since Wild Bill.
Damn, what was his name again?
Johnny Ringo. Johnny Ringo, are you still on the line?
The story spread throughout the land that I had beaten Ringo's hand. And it was just the years, they say, that made me put my guns away. But on his grave, they can't explain the tarnished star above the name of Ringo.
Well, I would like to say that I hate everyone more now than ever before, except Johnny Ringo. He's the only guy that I like.
Hey, this is Johnny Ringo. How are y'all?